Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
The Agile Brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of The Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priorities Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show.
We're here at Medallia Experience 2024 at the Wynn in Las Vegas, and there's a lot of exciting announcements we've been seeing, plus a chance to hear from leaders at Medallia as well as their customers about where the world of customer experience is heading. One brand that is presenting here, and who I'm excited to introduce in a second here, is from CVS, a brand that serves over 120 million customers, including over 55 million digital customers. And to illustrate their reach, 85% of the US population lives within 10 miles of a CVS Health location. Today we're going to talk about igniting customer centricity by personalizing, simplifying the customer experience, and empowering employees to do amazing work. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Sri Narasimhan, Vice President, Head of Enterprise Customer Experience at CVS Health. Sri, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the time. Excited to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this with you. Why don't we get started with you giving a little background on yourself as well as your role at CVS Health?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the Head of Enterprise Customer Experience, as you said. What that's really responsible for is getting all of the feedback from our consumers, our patients, our clients, people walking into our retail store, our Aetna members, collating that and understanding, you know, how can we improve the experience and how do we improve the loyalty of that consumer base by, you know, fixing pervasive issues, surprising and delighting, all those things that you think about when you think about that great experience. Just in terms of my background, I come at this from a very analytical perspective. The joke I like to tell is my dad, when I told him I was doing this, I think in his head had the picture of the guy that you see, you know, on the phone whenever you see the stock images. Right. So I was like, no, but we take a very analytical and data-driven approach and try to make data-driven actions from that feedback. So my background's all in analytics and data science, and that's the kind of the approach we're taking. And we're really on a journey, and I think we're making progress.
Great. Well, yeah, so let's get started by talking about what it means to ignite a culture of customer centricity. And we're going to look at 4 aspects of this. So first, how would you define customer centricity at a high level? And what are some of the primary KPIs that you use to measure it?
Yeah, you know, when you hear the word a lot, like right. Consumer centricity, it's like in every 10K, everyone loves to throw it around. I think we're taking a very intentional approach to it. And for us, what it means is creating a dialogue or an engagement between our consumers. If you talk to our consumers, our patients, and say our specialty pharmacy, what they're looking for is a partner in healthcare, someone who's going to be there along the journey, that's going to help them get and the answers they need and navigate what frankly is a very complicated healthcare system here in the United States. So we want to put them at the center of our decisions, put them at the center of products and services we're creating. So start with the consumer and the experience, and then have all the things that we're building fall out of that. I think the other thing that I like to say, and I've been saying a lot to my team recently, is someone told me this. If you think about companies where I told you tomorrow this company's not going to exist, and it would ruin your day. There's that set of companies that I'm sure you have. We want to be that company for healthcare. I want to be at the company where if I told you tomorrow that CVS Health didn't exist, it would be such a hard part of your day to know that you lost that. We want to be an institution, right? So we want to be an institution in U.S. healthcare. So I think that's the aspiration, to be the most consumer-centric company in healthcare. But yeah, it's a great question, and I think we're trying to be intentional about how we build that muscle.
Well, and I love that aspiration as well, of just not just being financially successful or, surface CX, not good NPS scores, but actually to be valuable and thing. I think that says a lot.
Well, and if you think about our CEO, Karen Lynch, will say, there's all these other efficiency metrics and things like that you may care about. She always starts with the member experience. And actually, to answer the other part of the question you asked about KPIs, NPS has become our North Star metric. In a sense, you want to pick one and go, and we felt like that NPS was a really strong metric in terms of holding ourselves to a higher standard. It's not just, was this a good satisfactory experience? It's, was it good enough for you to actually tell a family member, someone you love and care about, and put them through that same experience? Created a common language for us. But we use a number of different metrics and measurement around engagement, and we're increasing that and looking at those implicit ways that consumers tell us about the experience they had. Like, were they able to self-serve? Did they have trouble on our website? Did they have to call us? Like, we want to understand holistically that entire journey as we move forward.
Yeah. So I was able to catch your session yesterday, so a great job and really, some really great stats and insights and stories as well that you were able to share. So some of these questions I'm asking are based on that talk you gave. There's, a few aspects of customer centricity, as I mentioned at the top of the show. The first aspect I wanted to talk about is the delivery of real-time insights. So what does this delivery of real-time insights enable both the business as well as the consumer to, how does this help?
Yeah, and I think yesterday I described it as our four-part plan, so I think we're going to walk through the parts, which is like the most corporate thing ever. But yes, when we think about the platform, the sending and receiving feedback, and we get about 17 million pieces of feedback. I think it's probably one of the largest programs. You want to do that in a consistent way, because that asking of feedback is in and of itself an interaction. The other thing I think you want to be able to do is how do you embed that within your organization? We use the Medalli platform. We have 70,000 monthly active users of that platform. People are engaging with that, looking at that data. You want to make sure that you're getting the audiences that are looking, the data they need. And it's different levels within the organization that have that need. So, at the very top, senior executive may only need one view. Someone in a store or in a call center may need another. So making sure that you layer those views appropriately. And when we say real time, we want to make sure that we're getting that feedback out to the front line as much as possible to corporate employees so they're embedding it in everything they're doing. We talk about centricity, putting consumer at the center. Best way to do that, consumers are the best mirror. They're going to tell you exactly what's wrong. They're going to tell you where you need to get better. You need to be looking in the mirror, though. And we need to make sure that we enable the organization to do that. So we are making this as pervasive as possible. We call it free the data, and get as much of that through that platform to the organization.
Yeah, and that's a good segue to the second point, and also just a general theme that I've been hearing over the last, we're day one and a half, well, day two, but 1.5 days in, is this concept of self-service and enabling, as you just said, enabling employees at every level of the company to get what they need when they need it. And so, the second aspect here is closing the loop enterprise-wide. So can you talk a little bit about not only closing the loop, but also learning directly from members, resolving key issues, and what exactly does closing the loop mean?
Yeah, and it's a concept, I think, that has been around for a little while. We are taking a little twist on it, and we have really leaned into this. But the idea of closing the loop is when you get feedback, or someone actually takes the time to give you feedback. There's nothing worse than, you know, no one talks to you back or no one responds to you. And you see it all the time where it's like, you'll see it in the survey, especially for someone who's upset, it'll say, I know no one will read this. Right.
It's the passive aggressive yet true response.
Exactly. Yeah. But we read it, we do care. And so it's actually following up with that consumer to let them know we did listen, to potentially do service recovery if needed. But I actually think that letting them know we listen part is actually equally as important. And then I would say the other thing that I think it enables is what you would think of as the voice of the employee, voice of the customer through the employee. Because our employees are able to translate what the customer went through. Like a customer is just going to say, I hated your website, or I hated the store experience. And you're not going to be able to make that actionable all the time. But when the employee talks to them, colleague talks to them, they're able to actually get underneath the issue, kind of become a root cause analyst. And then they can surface that, and we surface that at scale. So it's just another kind of thread of data that we can leverage to improve the experience. So it serves really two purposes. Engages customers, engages employees. Employees love to have that. I talked about that partnership, that dialogue that they can have. We are enabling that. And then it also gives us this stream of data and information that translates what we might have seen from a consumer, because they don't speak in our language, our internal language and process. Translates what's happened to them into our processes so we can fix it. So highly effective tool. I'll just say one more thing. We're actually trying to get even beyond just doing it on people who gave us surveys. In many ways, I know you had a bad experience. You know, if you got transferred twice, or you know, you were on our website, we can track kind of like, you know, what your experience was on the website in terms of were you clicking in the same location too many times, all that stuff. I don't need to ask. I don't need to say, Greg, you were transferred twice and you're on the phone for 45 minutes. I don't need to say like, hey, how was that?
That can't have been a great experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now that we know that and we have all that data to leverage, it's, hey, let's proactively outreach then at that point. Or let's proactively outreach when we know someone is new to the company working with us and they have a lot of conditions or issues on the Aetna side. Let's reach out, help them right up front so that we can set them up for success. And then they're not, you know, if you want to talk about an ROI, they're not having to constantly reach out to us throughout their whole tenure because we got it right the first time. So we're expanding what we're doing, closing loop, getting more predictive, which I think is going to be exciting and kind of our twist on it.
Yeah, and I think that kind of gets to some of the challenges that I've had, at least in some of my work, is that you know, the gap between leading and lagging indicators, right? Is, you know, to your earlier point about someone, if they respond to a survey with something negative, it may be a vague comment of like, I don't like your website, which, you know, not terribly constructive. It may be true, but not terribly constructive. But to your point, getting real-time analytics and actually getting some of those leading indicators that can help you better assess, okay, they said they hate the website, but it's because they tried using the search and the search is broke, you know, or something like that. So yeah. I think that it helps close, you know, several loops, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and you know, if you think about the evolution of CX, just to get a little bigger picture here, I think the survey world is getting harder and harder to survey customers, right? There's survey fatigue. There's tons of that, you know, just people asking for your feedback. And as you evolve, you have to think about other sources of data. And I think you get a lot of signals from consumers that you don't need to ask. And in fact, asking shows that you don't know, and we talk a lot about personalization at the conference. The way you can get to personalization is saying, hey, I know what you went through, and I can see you, Greg, let me help you, like, and being proactive instead of waiting for you to say you had a problem. And I think that's the evolution here, and I think you're going to increasingly see companies leveraging surveys. They're still important for root cause, but leveraging all this other, like you said, all these other signals that are just available that you just haven't thought of using that way. It's just yeah, thinking about how to use that data differently.
I hope you're enjoying the first part of the show, and I want to invite you to check out another podcast from the Agile brand. It's called B2B Agility, and it's hosted by me, Greg Kilstrom. The B2B Agility podcast looks at the factors that drive success in B2B marketing with a focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make B2B brands stand out and thrive in a competitive marketplace. You can find B2B Agility on this podcast platform or wherever you normally listen. Before we get back to the show, I just wanted to remind you to hit the follow or subscribe button on your app to make sure you get notified when new episodes of this show are available. Now let's get back to the show.
Another thing that you touched on, which kind of brings us to our next point, is there may be customer service agents out there that have a piece of data, and yet there's operational issues that, you know, they're not able to, or they're not communicating those. And, you know, so solving some of those like systemic challenges and using operational data, customer feedback, all those kinds of things, you know, an organization may be collecting them, but there are internal barriers. How do you approach, you know, kind of breaking down those barriers, and how do you know which systemic challenges to prioritize? Obviously, in a huge organization, there's probably a lot of things that could be fixed, but how do you choose what to prioritize?
Yeah, and you know, if you think about CVS, we have CVS Retail, we have Aetna, we have Caremark, we have our primary care businesses, and they each are, you have a lot of similar challenges, but a lot of unique challenges. What we've ended up doing, and your point is spot on, actionability on all this feedback is so critical. If you're not going to act on it, why ask? And we are very driven by action. In fact, I'm held responsible to executive board committee and our board for the actions we're taking on the feedback. We have set up steerco's, another really corporate word, but we've set up steerco's in every line of business, and it's a set of senior leaders. You know, in our retail side, it'll be the folks that run the store. So in our operations team, and it's a whole holistic set of people on our clinical side, policymakers, operations, same thing in Caremark, and in our primary care businesses, it's all the field folks that work with our physicians, operations, call center. We have them all together. And then what we do is we come to that meeting and we say, here's what we're seeing from the feedback. We leverage heavily text analytics and analytic capabilities to figure out, hey, these are the major pain points. We do it across channel. I think we're, like I said, we're a huge program, so we can look across call center, we can look across digital, we can look across in-person interactions. We pull all that together and we say, these are the top 5-6 pain points. What are you guys gonna do about it? They tell you, and there's a corporate phenomenon that I love, which is, and I say love in jest, it's, hey, you know, talking about the issue is the same as solving it. People think that. So you'll keep hearing, you know, didn't we already talk about this? And you're like, yes, we did, but no one did anything. Right. So now what we're doing in these steerco's and saying, here are the issues. What's your plan? Come back. Tell us what the progress you've made. And it's really been a critical tool for us. And we're solving a lot of really, I shared a few stories yesterday, as you know, but a lot of really core issues. And it's causing cross-collaboration. And on enterprise issues too, because a lot of our parts of our organization interact with each other. So really it's holding accountability and bringing people back to say, like, you know, we're not just collecting this. You need to actually do something about it. And we're doing it at the highest levels of the organization. It's been really helpful. Last thing I'll add is that, you know, like I said, we report all of this progress to the board of directors. So and to Karen Lynch. So she is seeing, hey, these are the issues we've surfaced. Here are the plans. When are they going to get fixed? And, you know, and she cares so much about our consumers. She's constantly following up and asking. So it's been a really effective way to hold the organization accountable. It's been hard, but you have to do it. Otherwise, I just think that these programs fall on their face.
Yeah, well, and that accountability, a great segue to the next point. That accountability builds a culture of accountability as well as a culture of customer centricity. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know you mentioned working with Disney Institute on you know, helping to build some of the culture and things like that. But you know, what type of impact has that had on the organization? You know, both employees as well as the end customer.
Yeah, you know, we've launched something called Helping with Heart, where basically there's service actions we've created. The way I describe it is, most people have a ton of positive intent when they come. No one comes to work saying, I'm going to do a bad job. They really want to help people, and particularly in our space in healthcare, you have a really strong why. And you want, you know, and it can be really meaningful to you to impact a patient or a customer. What we have to do is just make it really intentional that we surface those things you know every day, but by reminding you, by kind of training it, by kind of showing you, and it reinforces it. So like giving someone a warm greeting, it's probably something everybody does, you know, just, you know, to do it. But as you get through your day or you get through your week, you may lose that, right? Because you just aren't constantly thinking about like training that. It's like anything. You need to constantly train even though you know it. And I think that that's what the service actions have really done. I'd say the biggest thing too for us is the link between colleague and customer experience is so critical. And you need to create that engagement between the two. And I think talking about this yesterday, you need to hit the engagement between the two audiences. And I think the more that you can make and enable your colleagues to just unlock their positive intent and operate the way they want to do with all the without all the constraints, all the issues that get in the way of that. It's just them talking to someone, them being able to leverage their ability to care, their empathy, the more effective you're going to be as an organization. So that's a lot of what we're focused on is empowering our colleagues and you know making sure that we create opportunities for them to do what's right for our consumers, surprise and delight. And then really just getting rid of those barriers that we put in the way so we can let our people are wonderful, let our people deliver our services. Because if we get to that, and when we get to that, we're incredibly successful. It's really it's all the stuff that comes around that, right? But if it's just the two people interacting, you know, it's amazing, and you see the impact. You know, we have these consumer videos. You see the impact on the consumers that we can have. We're helping people with some of the most powerful challenges that they have in their lives or their families have, and enabling our colleagues to get in the mindset of I can't wait to help this person, which is what they want to do. And it makes us much more effective.
Yeah. What do you see as the role of, obviously there's a lot of personal interaction. You've got, you know, retail stores, you've got phone interactions as well. But what do you see as the role of technology in this? You know, how do you see the relationship between, you know, technology and the employee as well as technology and the end customer to enable that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing you see increasingly, you hit on it earlier, consumers want to be able to get the information they need as fast and when they need it. Increasingly, our competition, in my mind, especially on experience, isn't like, you know, United Healthcare or Walgreens. It's all the experiences that are in the world. Like people are getting used to and being trained to be like, I can get what I want when I want it. And so we have to meet that standard in a lot of ways because healthcare, like I said, incredibly important. Probably the most important thing in someone's life. So that is where we're investing in improving our technologies and helping our consumers be able to self-serve more effectively, get what they need more effectively. On the colleague side, I think that there's a proliferation of tools that help colleague efficiency. If you have someone that's gonna go through that self-service, eventually they're gonna get to you. You wanna make sure that colleague has the tools to make that experience as efficient as possible. And in an organization like ours, there's mountains of information that someone on a phone may have to go find and help you with. The faster you can use technology to surface that, the better. And then I know I'm saying like, you know, our thing about our customer experience program, operating at scale at an organization like ours is very difficult. And so we are increasingly leveraging tools that are gonna help us synthesize information and get it in next best action terms, bite-sized chunks that can get to our retail field, for instance, or our call center supervisors. So again, the data is meeting them and personalized for their level and their organization. But I don't have an army of analysts that can go do that and work for that, like the, you know, everybody in the field. So the more we can leverage these tools that are existing and are coming out to do that, the better. And even on things like closing the loop, can we help and make that process more efficient with some of the tools that are able to look at surveys or kind of feedback, or any of the feedback coming in and saying, hey, this is the message that's probably appropriate to send to this consumer that enables our colleague to operate in that more efficient, faster way. So we're investing heavily in these areas, I think. And, you know, I think that's where most companies are going. You have to meet that demand. Consumer demands are changing.
Yeah, and I mean, probably an obvious observation, but, you know, it stands to reason that, you know, making that easier on the employee, doing some of the heavy lifting for them, so to speak, as far as analysis and things like that, lets the employee do what they do better.
Exactly.
Right? Humans doing what humans do best and machines doing what machines do better.
Well, and I think that's like one of the things that you get caught up in sometimes in data analysis and analytics. You get caught up in like how beautiful is your model,
right?
How great is this chart? And yeah, it is. It's great for, you know, guys like you and me maybe who are really data wonks and into this. But if you're someone who's operating a store and you have a mountain of challenges you're dealing with, you're just saying to yourself, can you guys just tell me what I need to do? What do I need to do to help these folks that are coming into my store? How do I need to do to help these people that are calling me? You're not looking for the fancy chart. You just want someone to tell you the answer. So the more you can just distill it down to that, the better. I think that's what you have to do. That's kind of this curve, right? You have to do the analytics to understand the underlying issue, but ultimately when you share it, it has to be something that's super simple that someone can digest quickly and act on. Again, acting on it being really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sri, thanks so much for joining. One last question before we wrap up. We're in day two of the show here. What's been your biggest takeaway so far from Medallia Experience?
Wow, great question. I think it's amazing to see, as I mentioned, the way people are moving and this industry is shifting. It used to be so heavily in surveys and solicited feedback, but now people are looking at all these different ways that we can leverage data and information. You know, you hear so much about AI and the tools related to AI that are coming out. I think that's really been, we've never been at a stage where we can understand our consumer so well without even asking. And I think that's where it's going to be an interesting thing when you talk about personalization, all these things that keep coming up, how you balance that with kind of the big brother aspect that's coming with that, right? Like I know all these things. How do we make sure we leverage that appropriately? I think that's going to be a fun challenge for people to figure out, because you're going to have to find that balance of personalized without overstepping that line. And I think, it's going to be a great evolution of this industry. And it's really great to see just the progress CX has made as a discipline, as someone who works in it. It's amazing to see what all these companies are doing, and hopefully we're viewed as a pioneer as well. So learned a ton. It's been awesome. I love your podcast too, by the way.
Oh,
so I always learn a
thank
lot
you.
From the folks you talk to. So excited to hear the sessions from Experience and all the folks you met with this week.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much. Again, I'd like to thank Sri Narasimhan, Vice President, Head of Enterprise Customer Experience at CVS Health, for joining the show. You can learn more about Sri and CVS Health by following the links in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkihlstrom.com. That's GREGKIHLSTROM.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides, covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kihlstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile Brand.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry, with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help, so you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.